This is Mike Roth. Welcome to the Open Forum in the Villages podcast. In this show, we're going to talk to leaders in the community, leaders of clubs, and interesting folks who live here in the villages to give perspective of what's happening here in the villages and information that I think all villagers should have. We hope to add a new episode every Friday morning at 9 o'clock. This is Mike Roth. I'm here today with Dr. Mohammed Elamir, and we're at the Avi Clinic in Brownwood, and today we're going to be talking about Alzheimer's. But before we start, I always like to start the show with a joke, and so here we go. Dr. Mo, as you like to be called, what do you call two birds in love?
I'm not sure, Mike. What do you call them?
Tweethearts. Okay, for the joke. And why don't you tell our listeners how you got involved with Aviv?
Well, thank you for having me on, Mike. And my story is a story of coincidence, actually.
Coincidence.
So I'm a board-certified internal medicine physician, originally from New Jersey.
New Jersey.
And I had a standard medicine practice, meaning I had three offices in Jersey City, New Jersey, rounded on my own patients in the local hospitals, mm-hmm. rounded on my own patients in the local nursing homes. And I loved what I did, but mm-hmm. I had to see about 50 patients a day to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't fair to me or my patients, you know, seeing you for 15 minutes, running to the next room, see you in 3 months. It's not what I wanted to do for my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I was always looking for new opportunities, but okay. Nothing ever piqued my interest. I am the son of a neurologist. My late father mm-hmm. was a neurologist, so I was always involved with the brain from a very early age. Used to intern in his clinics, in his MRI facilities. I used to help run the machines, so I was looking at the brain from an early age. One day, after my father retired, he suffered a small stroke. Mm-hmm. And that stroke affected his speech. He went from a full vocabulary down to about 50 words.
Wow.
Pretty devastating. So it led me to researching, what can I do for my father's brain after the stroke? Because up to that point, there really wasn't anything obvious that could heal. Mm-hmm. And I found research coming out of Israel from Dr. Shai Efrati showing hyperbaric oxygen therapy in a specific protocol can heal the brain mm-hmm. after a stroke and any injury for that matter. So I read every single paper. I was convinced scientifically and clinically that this is something that can help him and others. Here's the coincidence part. Recruiters used to email me and call me all the time about different positions that mm-hmm. were open. And most of the time I would delete those emails. Nothing piqued my interest.
Sure.
One day, for whatever reason, I opened an email and it was about the Aviv clinics in Central Florida looking for new physicians to staff their new clinic. And it said hyperbaric for brain health. I called them and I said, is this the same protocol that Dr. Shai Efrati is using in Israel? And they said, not only is this the same protocol, he is the owner of the clinic and he interviews all the physicians applying for the job. Hmm. So I immediately said, okay, I'm applying for the job.
You're in.
I just wanted to talk to him about my father. I had no intention of leaving my practice or New Jersey.
Okay.
But the coincidence came again.
He must have been a good salesman.
Well,
out of Jersey.
I thought it was going to be a phone call and he was going to be in New York City in a few weeks. After my call. Mm-hmm. And they said, I can see him for breakfast. That's the only time he had for me. That was perfect for me. I could see him for breakfast and then go back to my office.
Go back to work. Sure.
The problem is we had such a great conversation. Breakfast turned to brunch. Brunch turned to lunch. We spoke for 3.5 hours. I was really late for my office that day. But it was worth it because he told me everything about the research, what this clinic is, what it will become. It was still under construction at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for me to come down, meet the team. And they were smart enough to invite me in February, and mm-hmm. I was smart enough to bring my wife to say, hey, we can live in Florida in February.
from New Jersey? Probably was an easy sell.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the rest is history. I've been in here for 2.5 years helping people with strokes, traumatic brain injury, Alzheimer's, and a lot of different things here.
Good, good. Today we're going to spend some time and talk about an unpleasant subject, but one that affects a lot of folks here in the Villages area. Since this is open forum in the villages, we have a lot of villagers who wind up with Alzheimer's disease or diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So, in your opinion, is Alzheimer's disease a environmental thing, or is it a hereditary thing?
You know, in medicine, when we go through medical school, it used to be very siloed, where you would say these diseases are genetic only and these are environmental only. And over time, we're learning more and more. Most diseases have a component of both, mm-hmm. meaning you can have a gene that will predispose you to a higher risk of a disease in the right environmental triggers. So I believe Alzheimer's is like that. We have some people who have a gene for Alzheimer's. We've heard of the APOE4 gene. That's a very commonly used term. A lot of people are familiar with that. But it is a gene that has a high likelihood of predisposition to develop Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. That being said, I have plenty of patients that don't have the gene that also get Alzheimer's, and just mm-hmm. as many people who have the gene that don't get Alzheimer's. So it's not an absolute, but there is definitely a genetic component.
Is there a way to prevent Alzheimer's from developing?
That's the magic question. Prevention. Because we can talk about treatment and we have good treatments now, but prevention is more important. In the end, the brain is an organ, and mm-hmm. all organs want the best environment to thrive. Mm-hmm. So that includes proper blood flow, proper nutrition, proper rest. Mm-hmm. All of these things contribute to how the brain develops, how it thrives, and how it can succumb to damage. So there are many ways in terms of just living the right lifestyle in the right environment that can help you prevent Alzheimer's or any dementia for that matter. Mm-hmm. Everything from the proper amount of sleep, the proper diet, proper exercise.
Why don't we start with sleep? How many hours of sleep should the average 65-year-old get? Or is that an unfair question?
Well, no, it's a fair question, but there are two components. The amount of hours should be anywhere between 6 to 8 for the best. But the quality of that sleep is equally important, meaning you can sleep for 8 hours, but if you are not breathing properly while you sleep, for example, if you had sleep apnea, mm-hmm. basically as you sleep, your position will prevent airflow from going in and out easily. Mm-hmm. So the 8 hours of poor quality sleep with sleep apnea is equally as bad, if not worse, than 4 hours of good sleep. So that is also important. It's the quality of sleep in addition to the hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For our listeners, what are the earliest signs of Alzheimer's that people should be aware of?
We often consider Alzheimer's as a type of dementia. So often we think of memory loss, confusion, direction issues. But the very early signs of Alzheimer's can be something as simple as walking into the kitchen and forgetting why you were supposed to be in there, or mood changes, being more irritable, more forgetful, mm-hmm. being hot and cold, for example, meaning you are angry all of a sudden at a snap of a finger, and then all of a sudden you're laughing and happy. That could be a subtle sign as well. Equally as important is to realize the process in the brain that causes Alzheimer's happens 15 years before you notice your first symptom. That's why it's important to assess and make sure you're not at risk before you even notice a symptom. For example, if you have a family history of Alzheimer's, don't wait for your first symptom to get assessed and mm-hmm. modifying your lifestyle to prevent it. The first moment you feel like something's off, and often it's the loved one of that person that says, hey, you know, you've been more forgetful, or you seem a little bit more anxious or moody, or why did you make that right turn when you usually make a left? You know, that's often the case, that somebody else will notice it before you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it's caught early, are the symptoms reversible?
That's a great question. That's the key. Ideally, we prevent, but if we start to notice it early enough, seeking treatment immediately is important. And some of those conditions and symptoms can be reversible if caught early enough. And more importantly, most treatments will prevent the continuation of the symptoms or the worsening, the progression, correct. Mm-hmm. And that's equally as important.
Are there any truly effective treatments for Alzheimer's today? I know there have been a couple of prescription drugs that haven't been approved by Medicare.
Correct. You know, back in my practice in New Jersey, I basically had two medications I can go to anytime somebody had Alzheimer's or dementia or mild cognitive impairment.
Two?
At the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Back in even as recent as 10 years ago.
And today?
And today, there are newer approaches to treating Alzheimer's. Before, those medications worked on the connection and the signaling between two nerve cells. But now, we're understanding that the process of Alzheimer's involves the immune system as well as blood flow throughout the brain. Mm-hmm. So the newest medications are trying to target the immune system. So they're monoclonal antibodies that try to reduce the amount of plaque buildup that happens in Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is associated with what we call amyloid proteins and tau proteins that misfold in the brain, and those tangles cause the problems in the brain causing the symptoms. So these new medications try to target those proteins and reduce them. They are effective at reducing the protein, but unfortunately, they're not great at changing the clinical outcomes. So on the scan or on paper, it's working, but clinically, it still remains to be seen if they're very effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there any preventatives that may work?
In terms of medications?
Or lifestyle changes.
Lifestyle.
You know, on the web, there are 50 of them. I picked off about 15. You know, anything from a cold plunge to messaging to relearning how to drink water.
Yeah. So, you know, all of those lifestyle changes can make an effect. And if you look at the crux of why you're doing these lifestyle changes, it's to improve blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
It's to improve metabolic function through your nutrition. And those each individual cell needs the right nutrition and the right signals to work properly. And it's also ways to trigger the body to go into a healing or repairing state. So the body has an amazing property and toolbox of ways to heal itself. The key is to trigger it, open that toolbox, and allow the brain to actually use those tools. So whether it's proper sleep, you know, when you're sleeping, you're not just resting. You're giving your body's immune system and other tools to actually be released, help remove the waste that builds up in the brain, as well as help new janitor cells, as I like to call them, they're called glial cells. They help clean out the buildup of those proteins and other byproducts of cell development. Hmm. And that is critical.
So there are a lot of exercise-based regimens, whether it's stretching or jumping or water aerobics or pickleball, very popular here in the villages.
Absolutely.
Are these legitimate preventatives for Alzheimer's, or are they just placebos?
You know, I don't believe there's a study of pickleball versus nothing and then following them for 20 years to see if that made a difference. But we do know people with improved cardiovascular exercise and improved muscle mass has a direct correlation with brain function and cognition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are continuously exercising in a consistent manner, you are helping your cardiovascular system, which we know will help the brain, and building muscle mass, because all of us, as we age, go through something called sarcopenia, loss of muscle. And when we have loss of muscle...
Glad you said it that second way.
Yeah. you have a lot of smart listeners out there, Mike. I want to make sure I acknowledge them. So sarcopenia is the loss of muscle over time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose your muscle, of course, we notice things like, hey, I'm weaker, maybe my balance is a little off. But that is directly tied to your decline in cognition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're playing pickleball or exercising or doing yoga, you're building your muscle mass, preventing that sarcopenia. Not only are you helping yourself physically, but you're potentially helping yourself prevent Alzheimer's or dementia.
Mm-hmm. One of the craziest things I found on the web for preventing Alzheimer's was grounding yourself electrically, either at the beach or walking in wet grass.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
You know, like everything, there's a half truth in there.
A half truth as much as that?
Well, you know, I'm being generous. I don't believe you can't say that doing that will prevent Alzheimer's, but at the same time, it helps us recognize that the body has electrical conduction,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the heart or within the brain or our nerves. A lot of our testing measures the electrical conduction, whether it's an EKG or an EEG.
Mm-hmm.
These are little electrodes that go on the body, whether it's the heart or the brain. We can measure electrical conduction. So sometimes if there's interference with that electrical conduction, that can cause problems. But I don't think just walking on the beach or in wet grass will make a significant clinical change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So could you discuss for a minute the difference, maybe clinically, between dementia and Alzheimer's?
That's an important question, because not all cognitive changes are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So Alzheimer's is the biggest cause for dementia.
Mm-hmm.
But it is closely followed by something called vascular dementia. Vascular dementia means that the little blood vessels in your brain over time lose their ability to deliver blood, causing cell death on a microscopic level. Not enough to be a stroke, but enough to shrink the brain, cause atrophy and changes. So a lot of these dementias present similarly.
So a person's brain can shrink?
Just like a muscle can shrink as well. That's right. All of our brains actually go through atrophy and shrinkage. But in Alzheimer's, for example, the brain can shrink to two-thirds the size of a normal brain. Vascular dementia can have up to the similar reduction in mass. And that reduction in mass obviously will cause problems with cognition. There are little nuances between different dementias, though. If you have something called frontotemporal lobe dementia, meaning the blood vessels to specifically the front of the brain and the side of the brain is having a bigger shrinkage effect, those people not only will have memory problems, but those are the ones that have really bad personality problems. For example, somebody that was a gentle soul will be a really mean jerk as a result of this frontotemporal dementia.
So people get more aggressive with dementia?
Absolutely. That is common, unfortunately. But that is the nature of different parts of the brain responsible for different properties. And sometimes it'll manifest as aggression, depression, memory loss, attention issues.
Mm-hmm. Can diet help remediate some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's?
Yes, there are a lot of studies out there that help and that show that certain diets help brain health. For example, a ketogenic diet, meaning your body always wants to use glucose for energy. And if it doesn't have glucose, it'll use fat, basically. Mm-hmm. And those fats break down into ketones. And you can use ketones for energy. And in the womb, when you're in your mother's womb, you're exclusively using ketones for your brain metabolic production. So a ketogenic diet basically reduces the amount of carbohydrates, reducing the amount of sugar, increasing the amount of fats. And if you're in ketosis, basically only using ketones for energy, that can help your brain. There are a lot of studies in pediatrics, actually, that show a ketogenic diet was equally and actually superior in some ways than seizure medications for kids with seizures and epilepsy. Mm-hmm. So we know that it has a good role in brain health.
In sense words, are you saying people should be more like an Atkins diet, which is more meat?
Well, it doesn't have to be more meat. And Atkins is similar to ketogenic, but Atkins has a significant amount more protein as well. Ketogenic, you're really focusing on just ketones alone for energy. So it's a little bit more fat than the actual meat. It's not something for everybody. That's not something I want everybody to just go on automatically. Always talk to your doctor because there are risk factors with that too. Mm-hmm. But a proper balanced nutrition, making sure you're getting enough nutrients, vitamins, that's also important to brain health.
Mm-hmm. Are there differences in the Alzheimer's rate here in America versus other areas of the world with different eccentricities and dietary habits?
Yeah. In the United States, we're blessed in many ways, but sometimes those blessings of an easy life makes us more sedentary. So rates of obesity are significantly higher in the United States, and that is also correlated with higher rates of dementia and Alzheimer's. More so, other dementias are higher in the United States than other countries. Alzheimer's rates are roughly the same, but it is starting to creep up as well.
So what you're saying is the Alzheimer's rate here in the United States is about the same as it is in other countries.
Alzheimer's specifically, but other dementias is higher in the United States, like vascular dementia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any scientific evidence to suggest that yoga or meditation might help with Alzheimer's?
There isn't a specific study that says yoga or meditation by itself compared to a control group will help prevent Alzheimer's. But those kind of exercises and those kind of philosophies and lifestyles are proven in general to help overall health. And if you can help your overall health, that will help your brain in the end.
Mm-hmm. Are there specific tests now that can be done to correctly diagnose Alzheimer's and differentiate it from other diseases?
There are. Some of those tests involve advanced imaging of the brain. So in addition to getting specialized MRIs, there are functional imaging, like functional MRI or SPECT scans. These look at the metabolic function of the brain cells. And if you see a decrease in function in specific parts of the brain, like the hippocampus, that's a critical part related to Alzheimer's. And you can make that differentiation between that and vascular dementia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There are other proteins that you can measure in the blood and even the cerebral spinal fluid. So there are other ways, in addition to specialized scans, to help a clinician make that diagnosis. But in the end, you know, you have to put everything together. Cognitive testing, along with metabolic testing and imaging together, is the best way to make that diagnosis.
So here at Aviv, do you guys do that with your patients?
Correct. So we have those...
On intake?
We do. We have that advanced imaging capability here at Aviv, as well as blood work and cognitive testing. So when anybody goes through our medical assessment, we're able to tell you, do you have Alzheimer's? Do you have vascular dementia? Do you have something else? And is there something we can do about it?
Mm-hmm. What's the most common disease that Alzheimer's is confused with?
I think Alzheimer's is often confused with dementia, just general dementia or vascular. Sometimes people overlap all kinds of dementia with Alzheimer's. Because it is the most common, people just assume all types of dementia are Alzheimer's, and that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell our listeners briefly what you do, Dr. Moe, here when someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's or early stage Alzheimer's that's treatable?
Right. So when somebody comes in to our clinic, it always starts with that free consultation with me or one of our physicians. We want to hear your story, hear what has happened to you, what diagnosis you have been given, what your symptoms have been. And if we feel we can accurately assess it, then we progress you to our assessment phase. That assessment is 3 days of testing. In those 3 days, we will do those scans that we mentioned, that specialized MRI with something called a DTI sequence. This measures the nerve fiber tract connections in the brain to see how well they're firing and how many brain cells are in there. And then we do that SPECT scan. It's a metabolic CAT scan that watches and sees how your brain cells are functioning. And when we take that along with the advanced cognitive testing, a battery of tests, testing memory, executive function, attention, processing speed, as well as the medical exam with blood work and the cardiovascular testing and genetic testing. By the end of those 3 days, we will know more about you and you'll know more about yourself than you've ever did with any other testing. So we'll be able to tell you if you have Alzheimer's, if it's something else, and if it is, how far progressed it is. And after that, if we know we can help, then we progress you to our treatment.
Mm-hmm. Is the treatment always the same?
So the only thing that's the same about the treatment for each individual is the protocol using our hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So we use hyperbaric oxygen therapy in a very specific protocol to stimulate the body to make new cells, new connections, new blood vessels, and help the metabolic function of each cell. It takes about 12 weeks or 60 treatments with the hyperbarics to make the human body to trigger it to make new cells. So that part is the same, but everything else about the treatment is individualized, meaning we do cognitive training and cognitive exercises, and those are individualized based on somebody's assessment. Same thing with their physical exercise program, their diet, their medical protocols. So
you have your own physical therapy lab here?
Correct. So here at the clinic, we have our own physical therapy lab, our own exercise physiology lab. We have a whole neuropsychological suite where we do specific brain exercises for each client, the whole medical team and the medical wing, and then, of course, the hyperbaric side. So all of that is under one roof in our clinic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there other diseases that have correlations to Alzheimer's? Maybe like multiple sclerosis?
Multiple sclerosis is its own neurological disease and has its own pathway. So there isn't a correlation between those two. But what we believe is the main cause of Alzheimer's is related to the blood vessels and the blood flow in the brain. So if you have bad blood flow in the brain, presumably you could have bad blood flow in the heart, for example. Mm-hmm. So any cardiovascular disease tends to be associated with Alzheimer's as well.
Hmm. So someone who's had heart issues in the past might be well advised to have a screening.
Correct. Especially if you notice symptoms or just not feeling the same way before versus after that cardiac event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And people should be on the lookout for specifically what changes.
You know, every individual knows their body and their mind best. And sometimes we ignore subtle signs. But something as simple as, you know, I used to memorize my friend's phone number, and for some reason, I can't recall this fifth, sixth, and seventh digit. That's a little odd. That little subtle thing of forgetfulness that is significant. That could be an early sign of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much. Often we dismiss these things as senior moments.
Well, I'm okay there because I could never remember a 7-digit phone number. I was okay with the first 3 digits, your area code. But
well, and then, you know, the nature of having smartphones also makes it, you know, less of a need to memorize those numbers. So, but anything that you do on a day-to-day that you notice has changed, you know, your walk or hike or your bike ride, if you notice you're directionally challenged all of a sudden, like I mentioned, walking into the kitchen, forgetting why you were walking into the kitchen, if that's happening more and more and more, that's a sign that something could be changing in the brain.
I bet you just told 100,000 people here in the villages that something's changed.
Well, you know, and it happens to all of us. And it's become very commonplace to dismiss.
We call it a senior moment.
Senior moment. It's I've heard it all the time. And in some cases, senior moments are okay, but often it's a subtle sign of changes in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Good. I want to thank you for being on the show with us, Dr. Mo. And sometime in the future, we'll have to continue the conversation.
Thank you, Mike. I enjoyed our conversation today.
Thanks again.
Remember, our next episode will air live next Friday at 9 a.m. on our regular subscriptions. Bonus subscribers can get early access to episodes. Should you want to become a sponsor of the show, contact me at mikeroth@rothvoice.com. If you know someone that you think should be on the show, send me an email at mike@rothvoice.com. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. The content of the show is copyright by Roth Voice 2022, all rights reserved.